Okay, we're going to start with the Mishnah, the new Perek, at the top of Tzadi Bedam and Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Mocher perot chevero v'zara'an." The person who purchases fruits from his friend to plant them, v'lo tzimcho, and they didn't grow. V'afilu zera pishtan. Even if we're talking about flax seed, eino chayav b'achriyutam. The seller is not responsible in these cases. Now, in the case with fruit, where you purchase fruit, most people who buy fruit buy it to eat, or at least 50% of the people who buy fruit buy it to eat. So therefore, when he comes and claims that I used it for seed, you can say to him, listen, I sold it to you to be eaten. I didn't sell it to you to be seed. So in that instance, he has no claim against the seller. But even by Zera Pishtan, which flax seed, the majority of seed or flax seed sold in the world is for planting. Nevertheless, there is some or there is a mute that says that they do use it for eating or for other purposes. And because of that mute, we say, Eina Chaya Bachriutan, they're not responsible for... The mocher is not responsible to place them over here because he can say, when I sold it to you, I thought you were going to use it for other purposes. I did not think you were going to use it for planting. So again, Gemara will discuss this, but it sounds like Shmuel, which is that we don't go, but mamon lo azlin about the ruba. That when it comes to mamon, we don't go after the rove. And therefore here, the rove will not dictate unless he specifies exactly what he bought it for. On the other hand, if you buy seeds that their only purpose and their sole purpose is for planting, meaning they have no other use outside of this, then for sure the mocher is responsible to replace the seed. Because over here, what else could the buyer have done with it? It's a mekach ta'ut. The underlying sale or the premise of the sale is faulty. Because he bought seed to plant, there's nothing else he could do with it. Now the seed doesn't grow, then he didn't sell them anything. He sold them the equivalent of wood chips instead of seeds. So therefore he has to refund him the money. It's a mekach ta'ut. And he will have to replace the seeds that are over here. Those ask a basic question. Well, how do we know that he wasn't poshea? Meaning that the Rashbam gives it as a given that shalosh shalach yad. He didn't do anything wrong over here. He simply planted them. But who says that he planted them properly? Or who says that he did everything that was proper in order to grow? Why would we blame it on the mocher over here? So Tosfos has to come to the conclusion here that the case is that the glai milto the mafresh lo yiruin lizriya cloud. There was some way that they were able to clarify or test and show that the seeds were not good for planting whatsoever. I mean that it was a given. That or known that these seeds were problematic. It wasn't because of any other pshia or any other item that any other improper planting that he did. So therefore, we blame it on the mocher, on the seller. So Yitmar, so now we're going to make a case. The case is irrelevant to our mission, but we'll come back to our mission in a second. A mocher shor the chaveiro, person who sells a ox to his friend, but imsa nagchan, and you find out that he's a goring ox, so you don't want to keep him around anymore. So Rav Amar is a mekach ta'ut. The sale is a, underlying premise of the sale is wrong. There's a mekach ta'ut here, and he can get his money back. Who is a shor, right, to have it be a nagchan? People buy a shor in order to plow their fields. What do you mean? You can tell him, listen, you didn't tell me why you were buying the shor. There are two possibilities of why people buy ox. They can buy an ox to use for plowing, or they can buy an ox for shechita, to eat the meat. So now, if that's the case, we have, what's the rove? The rove actually is that most people buy an ox in order to use for plowing. Some people buy it for its meat. So Rav says, okay, let's go after the rove. If we go after the rove, then he probably bought it over here for plowing, and if he doesn't plow, it's a mekach ta'ut. Shmuel says, we don't go after the rove. We don't look at the rove. We look after, right, in Mamon, we don't go after the rove. We're going to see that in the conclusion of the Gemara, but here we go after the Tana Tova. If he has a good claim, and here the seller has a good claim, the buyer said nothing to him. If the buyer said nothing to him, then he can say, listen, I have no idea why you're buying it. I was selling it for you to shecht it. The fact that you did not clarify the matter, that really becomes, or that is your issue over here. Now, even according to Sumchus, it's the Rashbam Neshitato, the Rashbam over here says that since we paskin like Sumchus, we've seen before that Tosfos disagrees and says we do not paskin like Sumchus, but the Rashbam is even as Sumchus who says, Mamon Amutal B'Safek, we actually have a Safek here, we don't know, because he could have bought it for Shechita, he could have bought it for plowing, so why don't we say Chokin? Nevertheless, even the Rashbam says, even Sumchus will agree in this case. Why will he agree in this case? Because at the time when we say, Sumchus says, Mamon Amutal B'Safek Chokin, is where there's no way to clarify the issue whatsoever. Meaning because the facts are never going to be able to be known. For instance, if the animal gave birth before or after the kinyan took place. Since there's no way for us to ever know, then we say, Mamon Amutal B'Safek Chokin. But that's not our case over here. Over here, he has a good taino. He said to him, I sold it to you for shechita. And once he has a good taina, it's not that we don't know the facts of what happened here. We know that when he sold it, he had a good reason to believe that he might do it for shechita, even though that wasn't the rov. And if that is the case, then we don't even look at it as a mamon mutabo safik. We don't look at it as mamon that is left in some sort of limbo state, and therefore it's chokim. But rather, over here, according to Shmuel, the sale goes through, and the mocher, the seller, has no responsibility. So Amar says, wait a minute, let's figure out what the case is here. Let us just look. Let's look. Is this an individual who acquires oxen in general for shechita, meaning he's a tabach, he's a butcher, or ilaradio? Or is he normally someone who is an oved adama, he has fields, and he needs it for plowing? Meaning that the Rashban qualifies and says, it's obviously where they know each other, and when they know each other, it's as if it's obvious why he's buying it. If he knows the individual, and the individual owns fields, then clearly he's buying it to plow his fields. If the individual's a butcher, then fine, you could say that he bought it for shechita. Now, the case before, until this point, we thought, they don't know each other. If they don't know each other, then the obligation sits with the buyer to clarify exactly why he's buying it. If he doesn't clarify it, then the seller can make whatever assumption he wants. But now, if they know each other, and we're looking and seeing what he normally would buy it for, let's say, okay, let's look into that issue. So Gemara says, the guy with the seven lechachid ochi. It's an individual where it's unknown. I mean, there are two possibilities. Either it's unknown because he doesn't know the individual, or it's unknown because literally he buys for both reasons. He buys both for shechita and he buys it for plowing. So we're uncertain. The seller has no way to know, just by the fact that he knows him, doesn't mean that he knows why he's purchasing it. So where it says, let's look at the price. Right? Plowing oxen are higher priced than the basar shechita for meat. Obviously, because a plowing oxen has a long duration to it, and so therefore the present value of that ox is worth a lot more than somebody selling an ox just to shecht it for its meat. So if the price is higher, let's look at the pricing. So now, the Gemara, just before, we discussed this issue before, the Chachamim believe, earlier in this Masechta, on the Daf Ayin Zayin, we said that the Chachamim believe that damim enu modim, that the damim, the price never tells us anything about it. Maybe he's gifting him the price. We don't know anything. Price doesn't tell us anything about the situation. So the Tosus and the Rashbam clarify over here that case is different than what we have over here. In the case over there, the pricing is coming to either undermine a rove and a chazakah, or coming to underwrite a rove or a chazakah. You have pricing versus a rove or a chazakah, or both. And therefore, pricing can't make any determination according to Chachamim. Our case over here is different. In our case over here, you have Rov on one side, Chazak on the other side, and now we're asking for price to be the arbiter. We have on one side Rov, that most people purchase animals for plowing. On the other side, we have Chazakah, who's Muchzak in the money? The seller. The sale went through, he has the money now, so he is the Muchzak over here. So now we have Rov versus Chazakah. That's the Chachamim is willing to say, Damim Odim. In that case, we can look in price and make a determination, because here, the price is either upholding the Chazakah or upholding the Rov, and only going against one. It's not where the Damim, in the other cases, like on Daf Ayin Zayin, and actually in the case in the beginning of Ameniach, where the price, we're trying to use the price as the sole determinant to go up against the Rov or go up against the Chazakah, but there's nothing else supporting it. There, the Chachamim say, Damim Enim Odim. But over here, the Chachamim would agree that the price can be a determinant. So where it says, no problem, let's see the Aker Bisra come into Meir Ajo. No, the meat got very expensive. All of a sudden, there was a mad cow disease, some problems with the meat, and therefore the meat prices rose to the point where the value of meat was equal to that of a plowing shore. So over here again, there's no way to determine through the price what he bought it for. So where it says, Yehochin, the main afkamina, then why do we care? I mean, in the end, if the price of a shore for shechita and the price for a shore for plowing are the same, then who cares if it is a mekach taut in the end? Meaning that he can just resell the shore and buy whatever he needs. Meaning everything has the same value. So where it says, nachumi la tircha. That's the answer is the tircha. Who's responsible to take care of the problem now? Is it that the mocher, you return the animal to the mocher? Like Rav says, it's a mekach taut, you return it to the mocher, and the mocher's got to deal with it, he's got to sell it, and he's got to replace it with the animal that the buyer wanted. Or do we say like Shmuel, no, it's not a mekach taut. So the buyer keeps the animal, he sells it, and he'll have to replace it himself. So the question is, who has to be metapel, who has to deal with this animal, sell it off, go through the trouble of replacing it with the animal that the buyer wants? Is it the obligation of the mocher, that's Rav, who says mekach taut, or is it the obligation of the buyer, that's Shmuel, who says there's no mekach taut over here? Where it says, hey, chidami, wait, what exactly is this case here that we're talking about? Now, if the seller has no money to pay with, If he has no money to which to pay with, then the buyer is going to keep the shor anyway, because if he has no money to pay with, then it doesn't worth it for him to give it back and have the seller owe him money. I mean, if the seller is lost, has no money, nothing to his name, what, are you going to hand back the shor? No, of course not. So then, both according to Rav and according to Shmuel, the answer is the same, that the buyer has to take care of it in that instance. There happens to be a machlokas in the girsa over here. The girsa, according to the Rashbam, is that the ileket lishlumimei has nothing to pay with, that the seller has no money whatsoever. In that instance, we say, let him keep the shor, because better that he keeps the shor than he gets nothing at all. Whereas Tosu says, and the Reed brings down, that the possibility that the Girsa could be here, that he lost the money. The money that the buyer paid is already gone. Not that the seller has no money whatsoever to pay him with, but the money that he, in this transaction, already is spent. We've seen in other places, we've seen this, the Tosu brings it, both in Bamitzia, brings it also in Babakama. The Rabbeinu Tam has a Shita about when it comes to Nizokin versus Milve versus Poel. That what is the precedence, or what right do you have in terms of paying individuals? So the Rabbeinu Tam believes that when it comes to loans, you have to pay with cash first. If you have cash available, you got to pay with cash. If you don't have cash available, then you can pay with metaltalin, you can pay with anything else, metav. The other thing is Zakin, when it comes to Nezek, you can pay with whatever you want, because that's where the pasuk of metav sadeo, the drasha of, that you're allowed to pay with metav, like Rav Pup and Rav Huna Breda, Rav Yeshua, that you can pay with whatever you want with Nizakin. There's one final case, which is the Puel, when it comes to a worker or an employee. An employee, you have to pay cash, and if you don't have cash, but you have some other item to replace it, you have to sell it and provide the cash to the individual. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's actually three categories. There's loans where cash gets priority, and if you don't have cash, then you can use Meitav. There's a category of Nizakin where you can pay with anything. So whatever, first come, first serve, whatever you have, you can pay them with. You don't have any obligation to pay with cash. And then there's a Poel where the obligation to pay in cash is so high that you can't even pay them with anything else. If you have other items, you have to sell it and provide them with the cash. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam. Now, if that's the case, well, how could you explain over here our Gemara to assume if he has other money, just not the money from this transaction, that he can pay him with the shor? Why doesn't he have to pay up cash? There's a case of Milver. He lent him the money because there's a mistake done in the transaction. It's kind of as if he lent him the money. So that the Tosos clarifies and says, no, that there's actually a difference over here. This is not like a regular Balchov. That's not like a regular Balchov. That there's a difference here. If this individual is like a Mazik, he's not a Balchov. Right, so he says, we can differentiate between regular bachov and the case over here. When it comes to a regular loan, the person borrowed money with the intention or with the malve, the creditor, assuming he's getting back cash. In this case, when the transaction went through, David taut, right, when it was a mistake, lo mishalim lezuze kelitnehu lahanu zuze. Right, so over here, he's, paid him cash. It's not only when he doesn't have cash, does he can give him other things. I feel even if he has other money, when he spent the money that was used in this transaction, I become mazik. Ma'ot shochaveiro. It's as if he was mazik the ma'ot. Because it mekach ta'ot, it was almost like he stole the money because there was an underlying mistake in the transaction. So that money becomes like a hezek instead of like a loan. Vavi dino k'nezakin. And then his din is like a nezek. And we just saw there, Rabbeinu Tam, when it comes to nezakim, you can pay with whatever you want. So the Rashbam believes over here that you have to have it be that the seller here has no cash whatsoever. Because if he has cash, for certain, the cash is precedence, and you have to give him precedence in cash. Tosfos says, no, that doesn't have to be the case. Because even though you're right, the Rabbeinu Tam says in many places, when it comes to a Baal Chov, you have to pay cash first. So if he had any cash, you should have to pay cash over here to sell. But there's a difference. Our case is not a case of Baal Chov. Our case is a case of Mazik. When it comes to Mazik, then you can pay with whatever you want. And this individual is a Mazik. He's not a borrower. And therefore, even if he has other cash, but the cash that was used in this transaction is gone, then he can pay back with whatever he wants. That's one possibility to explain the Gemara. Or there's the Rabbeinu Chaim Katz, Zatzal, who disagrees with the Rabbeinu Tam and says that even by a Baal Chov, even if he has cash, right, he can pay back with whatever he wants because everything is called Meitav and he's no better than Nizakin. I mean, Mina Torah and Nizikin get paid with the Meitav and land that get paid out of Idit. Right, but a Baal Chov is not that way. Baal Chov would get from Ziborit Mina Torah. So if by Nizakim you can pay with whatever you want, by Baal Chov you can also pay with whatever you want. So now it would come out that there are actually three ways to read this Gemara. The Rashbam reads it means he has no cash whatsoever. Since he has no cash, he's got to take the shor. There's a Rabbeinu Tam who says, If he's a bachol, we would have to pay with cash and give cash precedence. So how do we explain the case over here? We explain the case over here. So even if he has cash, right, he doesn't have to pay it back if the cash from this transaction is gone. Why? Because he's not a lovel over here. He's not a borrower, and there's no creditor over here. The issue over here is that he stole the money. It's mekach taud. He misspent it, and now when he used it, he's a mazik. If he's a mazik, he can pay it like nizakin, and that means he can pay with whatever he wants. So even if it's alternative cash, he doesn't have to pay it. The Rabbeinu Chaim Katz says no. That when it comes to bachol has the same din as nizakin. You can pay with whatever you want. Cash doesn't get precedence. So according to him, the reason that you can pay back with the shor and not with cash, even if you have the seller has other money, Chov can pay whatever he wants. And so over here, you can tell him, take the shor. I don't have to give you the cash back. So Gemara says, why would you say this? Why would you say, keep the shor and not get the cash back? Damrei inshe. Right? People say, min mari rishuteich pari afra. Right? When someone offers to pay you, when you have a debtor who pays you, if he pays you with garbage, with subin, take whatever it is, because better to have the payment in hand, even if it's not the best quality type of payment, than to have to chase after him to get your money back in the end. Once you get paid, at least keep what you have paid. Where it says, L'tzricha de'ika l'shlumei me. No, he has other money. According to Rashba, means he has other money to pay back with, or according to the Rebbeinu Tam, means that he actually has cash over here from the transaction. The cash from the transaction is still around. And according to Rabbi Chaim Katz over here, is a case of mechach taot. Therefore, if the money is still around, then it's not like a loan. Meaning, because halva is lo tzanin. No, they're intended to be used, and therefore, as soon as the cash goes into his hand, it's as if it's gone. But over here, since there's a mechach taot, the cash that's in his hand is still part of this transaction. Therefore, if he has the cash in hand, he's got to return them. So again, depending on how you learn the problem before of him not having cash, will also be about the solution about when he does have cash. According to Rashba, means that if he has any cash, he's got to pay in cash. According to the Rebbeinu Tam, is if the cash from the transaction is still around, he's got to pay back with that cash. And according to the Rebbeinu Chaim Katz, also, if the cash from the transaction is still around, he's got to pay with it, because that's a mechach taot. It doesn't look like a milveh yet. Once the money's gone, then it looks like a milveh, and then it'll have a din like nizakim, and you can pay with whatever you want. But here, since the money's still around, it's not like a milveh. So Mara says, okay, so if that's the case, Rav Amar is a mechach taot. Rav says here, it's a mechach taot, but the ruba is linon. We have to rove, veruba the rajah's apne. Most people, the majority of people, buy oxen for plowing. So since we're going after the rove, even by mamon applies, and therefore the buyer has the upper hand over here, and the seller's got to replace the animal, he's got to pay him cash and refund the whole transaction. Shmuel Amar Lachak, he has linen but the ruba, when we go after the rove, is bisura. That comes to the dinei yisurim. Aval b'mamon lo, when it comes to mamon, we don't go after the rove. That is, but we go after the person who has muhzak in the davar, as long as he has a good taina. As long as he has a taina that there was a reasonable belief that he could have sold this individual because of the miyut. For instance, he could have said, listen, I thought you bought it for shechita, for achila over here. Then that's enough, since he's muhzak badavar, and he has that ability to make such a statement. We don't go after the robe by mamon. There's actually in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, there's a famous tosfos that asks in the Gemara in Semran, Gilon Bet. The Gemara there says that we go after the rove when it comes to Psak Halacha. So Psak Halacha, that goes by Bnei Nefashot, the puzzle teaches us that Acharei Rabbi Matot, that we go after the rove. So when it comes to Bezalel Paskan after the rove, so the Gemara goes, oh, how do we know by Dinei Mamonos? Gemara says it's Kal V'Chomer mi Dinei Nefashos. So Kal V'Chomer from Dinei Nefashos to Dinei Mamonos, that we know if we go after the rove by Dinei Nefashos, certainly we go after the rove by Dinei Mamonos. So Tos asks the question, wait a minute, we Paskan like Shmuel, and Shmuel says, Enel Chimachar Rove V'Mamon. If that's the case, why don't we say it should be a kal v'chomer midin nefashos that we hold of the hochim acharov by mamon? Why can Shmuel go against this principle that hochim acharov, it applies by din nefashos? Certainly it should apply by dinei mimonos. The Tosfos in the end comes up with a difficult answer, which he says that the rove of radio over here is different than the rove of a beis din. They're different types of ruba, and therefore we can't compare the types of cases. The Reb Chaim gives a different answer, and a very nice answer to solve the problem, which is that rove by Beis Din is very different. When it comes to ruba by Beis Din, for instance, you have three judges. Two judges say, pay. One judge says, don't pay. So then you have two against one, and then the case is closed. So if you say, Tosus's question is, well, you're going butter rove and mamonos. So the Chaim says, no, you don't understand. When it comes to a Beis Din, when it goes to two versus one in a Beis Din, it's not like there's two saying pay and one says don't pay. It's over. Once the Once the Psach Halacha comes, that we have a majority that goes one way, that becomes the unanimous decision or part of or Psach of Beis Din. That when you have two saying pay and one says don't pay, it's as if the one no, it's as if he doesn't exist anymore. So it becomes 2-0. I mean, it becomes the unanimous decision of Beis Din. Maybe even go as far to say that it's a 3-against. All three are saying that because the other one is not that he's batel, meaning that rov we're koveya pia rov. There's a rov and there's a miut and we're koveya pia rov. No, by Beis Din, when there's a rov and a miut, the rov is koveya and that's all that exists. The miut doesn't exist anymore. It's just the rov. So that's how the Reb Chaim explains the difference here. By Shmuel, we're saying ochim acharov. By Mamon, that's in cases where there's a rov and a miut. When there's a rov and a miut, we say don't go after the rov. By Beis Din, we're talking about a totally different issue. The Psach of Beis Din is not a din where we have rov and miut. We have rov, and then we have the other parties. Once the rov is the deciding factor, are they the ones who basically determine the psach? It's as if the miut goes away. So there's only one decision. There's only one part here. It's the rov. The miut's gone, and therefore it's not a din of hochim achar rov. By that way, the Reb Chaim differentiates between these cases and why it's not a question from Shmuel's position of here, ain't hochim achar rov b'mamon. Right now, the Gemara continues and asks a question on Rav. It says, Meitve, Aisha shnit almana o nit garsha, a woman who, right, was widowed or was divorced. V'yo merit betula nisite. She says that when I got married, I was a betula, so I'm entitled to 200 shekel kesef for my ketubah. It's either a place where, either where she lost her ketubah or a place where they don't give a ketubah. V'yo mer, an individual, either if it is a divorce case, the husband, or in a case where he's passed away, it's the yorshim. Lo, elki almana nisitich, that I married you when you were a, right, the widow. If I married you when you were already almana, then you only get 100. If we have edim witnesses that says you went out with the hinuma with the some sort of a crown or decorative bride's ornament on her head, and verosha parua, or her hair was, or the way the Rashi reads is, or her hair was uncovered in the shuk, we saw her going in the shuk, then ketubata matayim, then she gets 200. Time of the edim. It sounds from here that it's only because we have edim here that we believe her. How lucky edim lo. But without edim, we would not believe her. Vamai. Why should that be the case? Lema halacha charov nashim. Let's go after a majority of women. Rov nashim betulot nisot. Majority of women when they get married are betulot. So why don't we, according to Rav, if you go b'mamon hochem achar rov, over here we should go after the rov as well. Most women get married when they are betulot. If that's the case, why don't we give her the benefit of the doubt and say there's a rov? Why do we need edim come here to support her position? So where it says, I'm a ravina, mishum deikala meima, rov nashim betulot nisot. But the problem is, no, the rov over here is not such a clear rov, because you have rov women who get married, yes, they are betulot. Umiut almanot. And there's a minority who are also, who are widows. On top of that, but someone who gets married as a bitula, usually it's well known. It's something that is well publicized. Why is that? Because the Rashi says, "Mitoch sheish simcha minisuei bitula." There's such happiness in suei bitula. It's karim ba bnei adam. People remember this. It's something that has institutional memory in a sense that the city or the people will remember such a thing. So there's such a cult. Over here, we don't have anybody coming and saying, we remember, or there's a call. Itra la ruba. Therefore, there is no rove anymore. Meaning that she loses her rove because she's missing a part of the rove. Rove dictates, number one, that betulot are the rove that get married. But when we say that rove betulot to get married, we also say in that context that most people will remember. There'll be a call of some sort. There's some sort of, right, well-known that she got married as a betulah. So where it says, wait a minute, ikon nisot betulot yishlan kol. If it's a given that when a betulah gets married, people are, it's well known and people are going to know about it. Ki ika edim, my hobby. If they're edim now, what's the difference? If there's no kol, sadi shakri ninu. They're going up against the edim are going against something that a chazaka, that it's not, she's not a psula. So we're not going to believe the edim over here. It's as if they're edim sheker. Then you have edim going against what would be the given. The given would be that rov betulot are nisot, but rov betulot nisot also have a kol. So if they're missing this factor, when they come along and say, oh yeah, no, she really was a psula. Well, we would say, wait a minute, all women who get married have a kol. So if she's missing the kol, then you can't be telling the truth. Ella, you have to rephrase it and phrase it this way. Rov nisot betulot yesh lan kol. The majority of women who get married or betulot have a kol. So it's that majority of women are betulot, and the majority of women who are betulot, when they get married, also have a kol. Vizu, ben la kol, itra la ruba. So the problem here is that she doesn't have a kol. We don't have this kol that's associated with other women. So in general, if you have the kol, then we say blog butterov, no problem over here. The problem here is that this woman is missing the kol. She's missing whatever this well-known status of a woman that she got married. Everybody knows about it. Because she's missing that, we can no longer follow the rov. Because rov betulot to get married would have this kol, and since she's missing it, now we have to start to question whether she really was a psula. So now we have to look at the edim. So we say if edim come along, then we know it's okay. Fine, she's part of the miut. She was part of the rov of women who get married betulot, but she's part of the miut that don't have a kol. So now the edim come along and tell us that she was married a psula, then fine. But we don't have edim here, then we can't assume that she's part of that miut. Because then you have the miut that's going against that rove women who get married are psulot, but you have a miut that don't have a kol. So now she has one side the positive, one side the negative. So without edim, we're going to say to her, listen, you got to prove that you are a betula. If edim come along, then she has proof, and that's good. So that's how we explain this part of the Gemara according to Rav. All right, well, we'll stop here and continue with these questions from the Breitot tomorrow on the positions of Rav and Shmuel.